welcome to another episode of the Monday Mile Podcast. This podcast is all about keeping things moving, getting outside, walking, and getting our guests talking. It's all about finding out what makes people tick, their secrets to success, and how and why, when motivation is at rock bottom, do they pick themselves back up and continue to strive. You know what to do. Stick your headphones in and join us whilst we walk and talk. Today's guest is a bit of a superhuman, a stroke survivor, a TV personality, and one of the most entertaining content creators in the business. Oh, and let's not forget to mention, she casually won Dancing on Ice in 2020 with Joe Swash and is the reigning Dutch Dancing on Ice champion, Alex Murphy.
Hi.
How are you?
We're here. Thanks for having me. This is great.
We are here. Where are we?
I don't even know. I don't know where we are, to be honest.
We're somewhere in Hertfordshire.
We're somewhere out in like the sticks. We're hidden away. We saw some horses, so.
Yeah, I like it. I feel instantly grounded coming out of the hustle and bustle of London.
It's very zenning out here, isn't it?
It is. That accent.
Yes.
It's not a Hertfordshire accent.
No, it's not. It is a Bostonian American accent.
And I love it. What brought a Bostonian, I love that,
I know,
to the UK?
Basically, Dancing on Ice. I actually moved to the UK in 2014 to do a show in Blackpool. And
I've been to Blackpool.
Oh my God, you need to go to Pleasure Beach. It's amazing.
Really?
It's a great girls' night out. It's amazing.
I've heard it.
Yeah, you've now heard it here first. You need to come with me. It's fantastic.
Okay, awesome.
But yeah, so I went up there and I did a show. And then I went back a couple years later. I used to do it in the summer for a couple months. And was basically, I applied for Dancing on Ice and was found at that show. And got the job and came over here. And then ended up doing 3 seasons of Dancing on Ice and...
Boom, just like that. It was that easy.
It was that quick. Met a boyfriend, got a dog. Here I am. I live in Hertfordshire.
Take us back to the start, though. Your mum used to coach?
Yeah.
So ice skating?
My mum, she still coaches. She's 65 and she still coaches. Yeah.
So 65 and still on the ice?
Yes, like every day.
Good genes.
She's unbelievably fit. My mum is in such good shape. She absolutely loves skating. And so she basically used it as daycare and babysitting instead of getting me like a nanny or something. So I would go to work with her. And then I really took to it and just started asking for lessons and wanted to compete and wanted to do all the shows and wear the makeup. And then, yeah, next thing I knew, I was all of a sudden a showgirl, which is so weird.
How does someone go from casually skating at Christmas? Yeah. I can relate to this. This is the level I'm at.
Yeah.
To throwing spins on blades that are thinner than a nail file.
It's very hard. And people think that there's like this just easy transition. You have to have been skating almost your entire life. It's very rare to find a successful figure skater that started after the age of like 10. Like you have to have started it when you were little. Because most of the time parents will put their kids in skating, they'll take to it, and then, you know, a coach like my mom might say, wow, they actually have natural ability. Let me coach them privately instead of in group lessons and stuff. So yeah, it's really hard. Like, you know, my parents sent me to the Skating Club of Boston when I was, I think, like 7 or 8. But I was just using it as a little daycare first. And then they realized, oh, she's not half bad at it. I guess, should this be her thing? And they never really made me make skating my thing. But I kind of dabbled in every other sport. But skating was the one that I loved the most.
What are the physical attributes of an ice skater? Because it's...
A big butt.
Really? Oh, damn, girl.
Big legs and a big butt.
I think I'd be good then, I reckon. Sign me up. I've got the glutes.
Yeah.
Winter glutes.
Winter glutes. Winter sports are hard. Like, big legs and a strong core, and that's kind of a thing that you have to have if you're a skater.
And let's not forget to mention, also, a serious amount of guts.
Yeah.
I've seen some of the stuff you guys do. It's fair to say it's extreme. There's a real elegance to it, but you're really exposing yourself to injury.
Yeah, definitely. They try to say, you know, I kind of disagree with this a little bit with a lot of skaters. A lot of skaters say, you know, it's art, it's dance, it's ballet, it's this, that, and the other. I really just feel like skating is athleticism, and I think that that gets lost in translation a lot. I feel like a lot of skaters, you know, they want to say it's, you know, But the artistry and the contemporary, and this is kind of a new wave that's coming into skating too, with like modern dance and stuff, and that's incredible and I love it. But I really am actually finding nowadays when I see stuff online and stuff, I'm like, we're missing the fact that this is athleticism. This is like one of the hardest sports and one of the most physically demanding sports that is out there. And people go, oh, it's okay, it's just art.
No.
Do you know what I mean? It's just dance? And I'm like, no, this is so hard.
No, you gotta pull that curtain back physically. You need power and aggression
and
to be able to put your body through that. Yeah. I see that.
Yeah, definitely.
Respect.
It is hard.
And literally, it's scary. Hats off. Hats off.
Well, it's what you do. It's scary. It's kind of like, you know what I mean? It's something that no one can tell you what it's going to feel like when you have that adrenaline rush, but it's horrifying. Sometimes you go into something, whether it's a jump or a spin or a lift or whatever, and you're just like, you're shitting it a bit.
A bit.
You know? You're like, oh God, I hope this goes okay.
A lot.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot is what
exactly.
I'm saying.
Exactly.
Now, you've had a really unique journey.
Yeah.
Take us back to age 24. You're on a cruise ship. Literally, your life changes.
Yeah, so basically I was skating professionally from 18. I went to Disney on Ice and I did, you know, Royal Caribbean cruise ships and shows in Mexico, and I just, you know, I loved it. I absolutely loved being a professional skater, and that was the highlight, I think, of my life, especially at that time at 24. And I was on board a cruise ship, and I actually, unfortunately, I had a stroke. So I was finishing the show and I couldn't feel my right side and I couldn't untie my skate. And I couldn't hang my costume up, and I realized when I went into the mirror that I didn't know who I was. And
Alex, that's terrifying.
Yeah, it was horrible. That was probably, like, obviously my lowest moment, I would say. I couldn't speak, so I couldn't say anything to anyone or tell anyone how I was feeling or what was going on. And, you know, ultimately I was fortunate because there is a hospital on cruise ships. So they literally just wheeled me down 2 flights of stairs.
Wow.
And they just carried me down there and said, what's going on? We'll try to figure it out, and gave me a couple shots of Valium, which happens to be a blood thinner, like blood clot breaker upper, I guess. And I was just really fortunate that they did the right things without even knowing that I was having a stroke. And then, yeah, had heart surgery 2 weeks later in Miami and went to Dancing on Ice 3 weeks after that.
That is...
It was crazy.
It's unrelatable, that story,
yeah.
In terms of the process of coming back. But take us back to that moment and unpack that, because we touched on the fact that skating can be scary, various sports can be scary, but to have something impact your life like that and essentially change everything...
It was like the scariest thing that's ever happened to me. And I think that you, like you said, it is unrelatable unless you've had a stroke, or like, that's such a good word, actually. So many people have interviewed me and no one's called it that. And that makes so much sense to me.
It's very hard for me to connect, thankfully and gratefully.
Yeah.
I struggle to put myself in that situation.
Yeah. When you're in your own mind, and this is something that's really hard for people to understand, when you're having a stroke, at least my experience, and everyone has a different experience, you are imprisoned in your brain, if that makes sense. So you are in a bubble and you either can't speak or can't move or can't do your functions as a normal human being.
Can you think in that moment?
Yeah. So
but you can't...
I know everything. I remember everything, which is really like, not a lot of survivors do. I know a handful of them. And the ones that I know are like, I remember every second of it. I remember every single detail of what was happening, what my first words were when I spoke again, how I didn't remember my mom's name. Basically, I remember them asking me, can you say your name? Can you give us anything that would let us know that we're talking to you, essentially? And they said, you know, what's your name? I couldn't speak, so they gave me a pen and paper and they said, can you write it? And I drew a circle and then a line and then another circle. And I remember thinking about it, like later on, I know that I was trying to write Alexandra. So I was trying to write the A and then the D and then the A at the end, because I knew where things went. I had like this picture of what my name was, if that makes sense, but I obviously couldn't get it out. And I didn't know what my parents' names were. I didn't know what their names were for a few days. I didn't know who anyone was around me. I knew who they were. I knew what they meant to me, but I couldn't say what their names were or put a face to a name, if that makes sense.
That's absolutely petrifying. And in that moment, you've essentially lost full control.
Yeah.
Do you look at it as if time slowed down?
So Sorry, puppy. I'm like, sorry, puppies. Hi. I always say that it's like a bubble. It feels like you're in this bubble. You can see everything that's going on around you. And this isn't true for all survivors. This is just was what my experience was. And you're in this like zone where you know everything that's going on. You see every person. I watched the staff captain come in and drug test me because they thought I was on drugs. Yeah. They were like, why is a 24-year-old not speaking and like basically passing out and not moving her side? They didn't know what to do. So they have to rule out every factor. I remember being out of body when my friend Liz, who was a friend of mine on the ships, she had to come in and bathe me because I needed to have a shot. Like it was 8 hours later and they were like, get her showered, get her sorted. And I couldn't stand up. So I had like a friend who was, you know, if I was 24, she must have been like, what, 28 at the time, like sobbing over me and helping me shower, like helping me in a handicapped bathroom. Like I, you know, so I remember all of that. What I said or what I did during that time, I don't really know what it would have come off to anybody else, but I know that in my head, I remember what happened in my head, if that makes sense.
It's smart because it's the stuff that you only dream that could be a possibility. It's like being stuck in a cage.
It's like, you know, when you run in a nightmare and you're running and running and then like, or if you fall off something and then all of a sudden you wake up, it feels kind of like that.
And what was that process like coming from that position of no control
to things coming back?
Yeah.
This is when the conversation of, do you believe in law of attraction? Do you believe in God? Like what, this is when that conversation comes into play. Cause I just remember saying, I prayed a lot. I mean, my family's Irish Catholic. I prayed a lot and I talked to the universe a lot and I talked to God a lot. And I remember just saying, if you get me out of this, I promise I'll be a force for good. I promise I'll do good things. Wow. It chokes me up. I've never, no one's ever asked that either. You're asking a lot of good questions today. Yeah, no one's ever asked that. I just remember, I was like, if I can get through this, I will do good things. I will never be, you know, you think of all the bad things that you've done in your life. You're like, I'll never be mean to my mom and dad again. I'll be such a good kid. And you think of all these things that, you know, are so unimportant to you. I'm like, I promise I'll be better. I'll be better. I'll be great. I'll be a force for good with all this. I promise. And yeah, and then I came out of it and I was super grateful. And I think the other thing that was interesting was I knew that I was going to come out of it. Does that make sense? So that entire time in the bubble, the entire time not being able to communicate to everyone, I knew it was going to end, if that makes sense. And I think a lot of stroke survivors, whether that's just like divine belief in, you know, the law of attraction, or I never had any doubt that I was going to be okay. I don't know how to explain
that's really powerful, because in that situation the majority of people would think that's it, it's over.
Yeah,
but to know deep down it's almost as if it happened for a reason.
Yeah, it is. I always say it was the best thing and the worst thing that ever happened to me. It gave me such a good perspective at 24 years old of what was important again. You know, you get really caught up in a lot of things in your mid-20s, and it's, you know, being a teenager now or being in your 20s now is hard. Life is difficult. You hit your 30s and everything's great. And I think I hit 24 and my mentality changed on what was important in life, what I cared about, what goals I wanted, what I really wanted to achieve. And I also kind of just got this perspective of, you know, whatever, YOLO, like, just do it. He's like, don't be scared to do anything because you could go tomorrow. And that, I think that's a scary thing. I did live with a lot of stress and anxiety of, oh my God, could this happen again for a while? That was hard.
Are you at a point now where you're content in yourself and in that you found a balance with the relationship of it happening again? Is there an increased chance?
I have Murphy's Law. Like I've got like, what can go wrong will go wrong. Like that's just my life. It's always been our family's lives. But I also, everything that can go right in my life always goes right. Anything that I've ever wanted that could.
We love that.
Anything that I've ever wanted that I've decided that I've wanted, I always get. But again, that's law of attraction. I've always been like, I have Murphy's Law that, you know, this was a perfect storm. If you think of it, I was on a cruise ship, 24 years old, in ice skates, having a stroke in the middle of the ocean. Or you could look at it as, I was 24 years old, so I was in amazing shape for my recovery. I was in the middle of a cruise ship that had a hospital on it. I landed the ship the next day in Tenerife from the Canary Islands, so they took me immediately to the hospital the next day. You know, there's so many things that I could look at it, and like, it was the perfect storm of everything that was bad. But I look at it as it was, you know, I was on Royal Caribbean, so they made sure they took care of me. Like, what if this had happened at home in my bed and nobody noticed? You know, I think that's how I've always chosen to look at it.
A really, really special outlook on life. A lot of people see the bad in a bad situation, but to take those few tiny pillars of positivity and own them.
You have to,
don't you? So you turned it around.
Yeah.
Miraculously.
Somehow.
3 weeks later.
Yeah, we were on. 3 weeks later, I flew to Amsterdam to do the Dutch Dancing on Ice.
How does somebody make a recovery that quickly? Were you recovered?
No. Should I have gone to that show? I mean, I remember saying to them, I don't want to have the heart surgery. I'll do it when I come back from the show. This is my like TV break. This is what I've always wanted to do. I need to do this TV show. I'll do it when I come back. And the doctors were like, you will die. So we're going to do it now, but we'll do it on Monday. Like, they were like, fine, we understand that you're going to the show. And they were so amazing. Like, it was at the University of Miami in Florida. It was a teaching hospital. And they were incredible to me. They knew that I had a window. I had like literally like less than a month to get better. So they did the heart surgery. We fly to Amsterdam and I meet my partner, and eventually by the time I got to meeting him and I was like, look, let's have a conversation off camera and I need to tell you, I'm damaged. And he was like, what do you mean? I'm like, if you touch me, I'll bruise. I was on all these blood thinners and I was on Coumadin and aspirin and all these things. And I was like, no one can know about this. Don't tell anyone, but I'm telling you, I've got stitches in my groin. Like, I was literally like going through so much stuff with him.
Sounds
and he
like
was
you
fantastic.
Had almost like the surgery of a C-section.
Yeah, I mean, it's very smaller than that. Basically, they go through your femoral artery, they call it, and they put these little holes in you. And basically, you get four holes, and they go in with the camera, and they fill the hole in your heart. And it's just like, science is wild. So basically, they turned around and they fixed me all up, and then by the time I went to meet him, he was so accommodating and so lovely. His name's Tony. He's like the nicest guy on the planet, and we won 3 months to the day. It was crazy.
That is wild.
It's a crazy story.
That is Murphy's Law.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen to normal people.
No, everything went right. Do you know what I mean? Everything went wrong so that everything could go right. That's what I always say.
That's mad. That's actually mad.
It is.
Right, and since then, so yeah. Dancing on Ice.
Yeah. Then what? I came to this Dancing on Ice.
Mad.
Yeah, came to this one.
Won that as well.
Yep, won it with Joe Swash, who's also an amazing partner. I had amazing partners my 3 years here in the UK. I was really lucky. They're all really good guys. Joe obviously was fantastic, and he had so much faith. I think he wanted to win the show because he wanted me to win the show, if that makes sense. To him, it didn't matter. Of course it matters, but like, to me, he knew it was a big deal. So he was like, all right, I'll stay an extra hour. I'll train a little harder.
It seems like the professionals inject so much passion.
Oh yeah.
Into it.
We're all obsessed and we're all a little bit crazy. You have to be a little bit crazy in order to be swung by your feet and thrown over somebody's head, you know?
Yeah, especially Joe Swash's head.
Oh God, yeah. He was dangerous. You know what? I've never been injured ever in my skating career until I met Joe Swash. Got injured twice.
We had just
a couple falls and yeah, but he's a lovely guy and he was amazing. He treated me so well and really wanted to win the show and worked super hard. All my partners were hard workers, which I was really lucky about.
With something like Dancing on Ice comes the sequins, the glitz, the glam, as well as the media attention.
Mm-hmm.
Did you always love that? Or was it something, as an athlete, you had to grow to love?
I think when I decided to go into the show world and leave competitive skating, I was always more of a show skater. Like, I was the one at the end of the year that everyone would be like, oh, she needs to be in the ice show. That's what she shines in. There was less pressure, and I was just having a great time. But I know I didn't expect what was going to happen when I came over here, that people would be interested in our lives, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I didn't realize, like, my first year of adjusting, having Kem Setanay, he had just come out of Love Island, it was really hard. Like, I remember being in his car, in his front seat, and running away. Like, there was a paparazzi, and we're, like, driving around the Hemel ice rink, going around the roundabout a few times so that he doesn't follow. Because we were like, this is weird. So it was shocking to me that the media attention was a bit different. Now it's not like that, but yeah. It was a bit weird in the beginning. I think I've, obviously, as an athlete, You're an athlete first, and nothing can
prepare you for it either.
No, yeah, nothing can really prepare you for, and also for people to dig into your personal life, you know. I've had some bad articles written about me, like everybody does, and or some really personal articles written about me that I wasn't comfortable with, and or that I never said, and things like that. And you get kind of, you do get defensive, but then you have to remember, how fortunate are we to be in this situation that people even care?
That's you know? A crazy thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you've seen those articles where stuff's been written that's maybe not true, or a misspelling of the truth.
Yeah.
How did you deal with that? Because it can hurt.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's the same thing with like trolling and social media and how do we handle people online and etc. like that. It is really hard. I think that we underestimate the fact that people are people behind these phones and behind, you know, we look at an interview of, I don't know, Holly Willoughby or something and you forget that that's a person. And yeah. I think that, yeah, obviously you're hurt by it, but again, I think athlete first. My mentality is very different. It's like, ah, well, whatever. It doesn't really affect me. I kind of have like blinders on because it's anything that like deflects from the goal that I want to do is, yeah.
It's like the blinkers are on. I'm just going to bat that out. Bang, bang, bang.
Exactly. That's what it is. It's like the horse blinders are on and you just, anything that deflects you from your goal, what's the point? You can't let it bother you.
Talk to me about now though, because
yeah.
This is what I'm intrigued with, because I can relate and connect to this. You're a full-time content creator.
Yeah, how weird does that even sound to hear you say that? It's just strange.
It's wild. And yeah. You are absolutely crushing it. I Aww, love seeing you. Everything you produce and create. You are hilarious. Oh, you need your own
you.
TV show.
Thank
can
you.
We manifest this
Let's
right
do that.
Now?
I love that. That'd be great. Then I wouldn't have to edit it all.
What's the motivation to keep reinventing?
Okay, so that's a good topic. So I remember I had a piece of advice given to me when I was probably like maybe 19, and it was a friend on tour, and she said to me, you need to reinvent yourself every few years. You can't just be Alex Murphy from high school, and then Alex Murphy from Disney on Ice, and Alex Murphy from,
Dancing on Ice.
Exactly, you have to reinvent yourself.
There's lots of ice going on here.
Yeah, lots of ice.
There's
yeah.
less ice involved
there's
now.
There's less
though.
Ice involved now. And she said, you know, you need to reinvent yourself. And that was such a good piece of advice. And I swear by that, you know, one, you'll get bored with yourself. So my motivation is to never be bored because I have a short attention span.
Don't we all?
Yeah, like I like to do stuff. I like to be busy. And the other thing was I love skating and I love what I do. But I also was at the point where I felt like I had achieved everything that I wanted to. I don't have anything else left on the table.
Ooh.
So I was able to step back and go, well, what's next? Like, what would I like? What do I actually want to do? And I've wanted to be a TV presenter since I was 14. I've always wanted to be Holly Willoughby, essentially. And so I was like, well, what's the best way to get into that? And then I just said, okay, well, social media, that's a way forward. So right now I'm in my social media phase and I love it. And then it's been the best job I could have ever asked for. Fortunately, I ended up dating a social media like guru. He helped. He's taught me everything, and then here we are.
It's incredible social media, though, because essentially it's a shop window for you to showcase
yeah.
the best or worst version of yourself, depending on what you do. In your yeah. case, best.
Yeah, sometimes worse.
So
sometimes it's not that flattering.
Swings and roundabouts, but it's relatable.
Yes.
The worst is relatable.
Yes.
And that means people can connect.
Yeah, and I think that's so important online because like you said before, like when people troll or anything like that, it's like we are all humans and it's all relatability. And I think that's the most important thing that we're finding on social media right now that we can take from it is like the more relatable you are, the more people love you.
It's so true in that you essentially are generating opportunity for yourself.
Yeah.
You recently presented a big awards night. That probably wouldn't have come about.
Oh, exactly. There's
Unless
no
you
way.
Put it out there.
So last week I hosted the National Social Media Awards. And like, if you told me at the end of Dancing on Ice that, oh yeah, in 2 years time, you're going to have a social media like profile and, you know, a couple people might be interested in you. And also you're going to host a National Social Media Awards ceremony with all of these amazing creators that you've seen and watched. I'd be like, no way. I'd be like, no way. That's not true. And somehow it happened and it worked and I loved it. And I had the time of my life. But like you said, you're creating your own opportunity finally.
Do you believe in manifestations?
100%. I believe in like the courage to speak it, which is really hard for people because some people can take that off, you know, oh, it's not confidence, it's arrogance or it's narcissism. But I think that like some of the most successful people in the world, they always say, like Conor McGregor always says, those that have the courage to speak things, speak it into existence. And that's, you know, I say I want to be a host and a presenter because I'm speaking it to you, so hopefully it's good juju and it will happen.
It will. You know? Let's put it out there.
Exactly.
I'm there with you.
We're doing the vibes with the sheep out here.
We're doing it together. What you do, though, it takes an incredible amount of work and self-discipline.
Mm-hmm.
How do you motivate yourself when you are your own boss? You could get up at 11 a.m., chill, have a coffee, watch some TV, and just the day, let the day run away with you. How do you install discipline?
It's hard. I think, but then again, I think that comes back to being an athlete. We like schedules, don't we?
Ooh,
we
love a schedule.
I love a routine. So I get up every morning and I have a routine. And, you know, whether it's like the first 10 minutes are coffee, which it is usually coffee and the dog. And I sit around for a bit until I figure it out. But then I treat it like a 9-to-5. There isn't a day that I don't get up and I work from at least probably the hours. Probably, I would say from like 8 to 8 is usually what I do. But
wow,
obviously
that's
then...
Long.
Yeah, it's a long day, but then you like, you know, you take your breaks in the middle of the day, you go for a run. I'm really lucky to be in a position where I'm flexible. I get to create my own hours, but I create them and I make them long because I got a lot of things I still want to do, you know? I got a laundry list of stuff.
I like the coffee part of the routine.
Every morning.
Yeah.
And sometimes a day.
as a former athlete, is it fair to say former? Or
Yeah, it is. It's weird because I feel like I haven't skated since last year, really, in a show or anything. But I think, never say never. I would always go back to it. But I'm almost retired. Is it a retirement? Is that what we call it?
Yeah,
like, what do we call it?
I'm a retiree.
That's what I mean. Do we call it retired?
I embrace that. You know what I say?
It's on the shelf.
I will always be a snowboarder, though.
Yeah, I'll always be an ice skater.
You'll always be an ice skater, as well as a TV personality.
Oh, that's a good.
So let me just put that.
Juju. We love that.
Yeah, that's the one. But in terms of your fitness and your mental health, a lot of time online can be damaging for the mind.
Mm-hmm.
How do you find that balance?
Oh, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, unfollow people that don't motivate you, unfollow this, that, and the other. I think I really look at social media as a job. It's not a source of enjoyment for me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Creating the videos is enjoyment. Editing the videos, that stuff is enjoyment. But going on it to scroll, I don't sit in bed and scroll.
We call that the rabbit den.
Yeah, so I do like a TikTok hole. Like my, I'm to go into like a TikTok hole or an Instagram hole, it's just puppies. So like that's all I tend to follow. So,
nice.
And I don't know if I did it on purpose or if that's just what shows up on my pages, but I don't enjoy it. It's not something I do for fun because it's work. So anytime I'm on my phone, I'm searching for the next big idea. I'm trying to get inspiration from something, so it's not really enjoyable.
Yeah, I was gonna say, so you're constantly working.
Yeah. So I'm like, if you have to shut your phone off at some point, so you have to say enough's enough. And you know, like on a Sunday, all of a sudden I'll get a great idea and I need to film something, but it's because, you know, I was sitting at lunch scrolling on my phone and I found something. And I think that's why social media doesn't bother me as much. It doesn't have a negative effect on me because I don't look at it as anything other than work.
That's strong.
Yeah,
that makes sense. I'm gonna take that. I like
that. It's just a job.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just a job.
Get on there.
It's not reality.
Push it out.
It's not real life.
Get the job done.
You know?
It's a filtered window.
Yes. Sometimes it's good, and I really think it's great creators that are super raw. I really admire creators that do stuff for their audience that, you know, lets them see them without makeup and stuff. So I try to do that and try to show people things and
the real deal.
Yeah.
Alex Murphy laying down the law.
Yeah,
literally.
You have to show people what you really like.
On that, got a chat, Paul Klein, your boyfriend.
Yes.
You met him on Celebrity Coach Trip.
So weird, isn't it?
Celeb Coach Trip, what's the deal? How was it?
Oh my God, we had the best trip, honestly.
Was it essentially just a giant holiday?
Well, you know what? I remember coming back and going to Dancing on Ice afterwards and being like, wow, Coach Trip was a lot of work because you're mic'd from 6 o'clock in the morning.
Ooh, yeah.
You're done being filmed at like 11 o'clock at night.
Long days.
Really long days, but also like, just that, again, censorship of going, oh God, I really hope I don't say that. By the second day, you forget. I don't know what I said during that show. When I go back and I watch it, I'm like, oh my God, that's so embarrassing. But you get so comfortable.
Filter is off.
The filter's off within the first, like,
it's
day.
It's non-existent.
And yeah, and then I ended up meeting Paul, and it was great. And, you know, everybody kind of tried to set us up, and then it just makes me laugh when I think about it now. It's been like almost 3 years and we have a puppy and a house. And
here we are in Hertfordshire, family life.
Yeah.
I feel rather settled when I make a trip out to Hertfordshire. Coffee's on.
Yeah.
It's all very cozy. I like it. What's your relationship like with Monday, the start of the week?
Oh, I love Mondays. I might be like, that's probably not popular opinion, but I love Mondays.
You know what? The majority of people that come on this podcast love a Monday.
Really? I love a Monday.
Because they're all go-getters.
Yeah, it's like, it's a new start. Like today's, you know, we're doing this today's Monday, sorry. Today's supposed to be Monday. Sorry, cut.
It's Friday.
I was like, it's Friday.
It's fine. You can let the audience into the secret.
Yeah.
It's not always recorded on a Monday.
Yeah, we're filming this on a Friday.
A Friday evening.
But I'm looking forward to Sunday night because I like Monday morning. Does that make sense?
Wow. Now, you really are special, Alex, because not many people can say they're that excited about the working week.
Yeah, like I prefer, I don't know, but I think that comes with being able to be in a fortunate position that I know, and I'm really grateful and really lucky to get to make my own schedule. Because some Tuesdays can be like Saturdays for me. Just depends on the day of the week.
It totally depends on what you've got on. If you've got a late night, maybe you'd make the next day a little bit more mellow.
Exactly.
Maybe a little lion.
And then you work on a Saturday. It's fine. You make your own schedule.
But I think that's something that's important to note. I've had a situation before where people have said to me, oh, it's all right for some going out on a weeknight. Yeah. I am actually. And I'm going to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Because you know what? I'm working all weekend.
Yes, and people
Friday
don't
night,
realize that.
Saturday night, Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. And I think, I think we need to tread carefully around that and respect the territory because you'll be working when others aren't.
Yeah.
And it's that balance.
Definitely. And I think everybody reserves the right, especially if you're like, you work from home or you make your own schedule. That's the joy of being able to work from home and make your own schedule. You get to choose when you want to have a day off or when you want to take that time to, I don't know, spend it with your dog or your boyfriend. Like, and that's the thing, you know, Paul also is a content creator, so we have to try to arrange our schedules. Most weeks, Monday through Friday, is off limits. It is work until 8 p.m. at night, and we see each other at nighttime. He leaves in the morning, and then on the weekends is when we spend our time together, like an average couple. But sometimes it changes. Sometimes on a Monday, something will be different. Sometimes on the weekend, they're working a Saturday. Sometimes I'm working a Sunday. It doesn't matter. You have to learn to adapt. But it is hard when people do say that to you and they're like, oh, lucky you.
Right, some. Yeah, but then say on the Friday night when you're working, they're like, oh, you're not coming up.
Yeah.
No, because I'm working tomorrow and I'm getting up at the crack of dawn.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, boring.
I know.
So
it's true.
That can be tricky, working outside of normal hours. But
that's why you need to have friends in the industry that you can hang out with.
Hey, yeah. Very true. Very true. For those people that are looking for inspiration to maybe follow their dreams in the path of content creating.
Yeah.
Do you have any life mottos or tips that you can share to help people?
It's hard because it's like there's so many things people be like, oh, tell us how to cheat the system in social media and how do we do this? And you're lucky because, you know, your boyfriend has a following and blah, 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 that people, they really underestimate it. But, you know, when Dancing on Ice was over, Paul and I sat down and he was like, well, what do you want to do next? And lockdown had happened and all the rinks were closed, so I couldn't coach or do anything like that.
You started ice skating in your back garden.
I did. I started ice skating
on
in the back garden.
I did. Ice.
Exactly. But he said, you know, you should really try the social media thing because I think you're funny.
Like, you
I think,
are funny.
He was like, I think people would find you funny. And I was like, oh, okay. And he's like, but you have to actually be you. He was like, because your social media doesn't match up to you at all. And I remember being like, yes, it does. And he was like, no. He's like, you're nothing like that. And it's like a picture of you.
What was that before?
It was like pictures of me on Dancing on Ice looking like, you know, Barbie. Yeah. And he was like, you're nothing like that. And I just remember that was like such a shock to my system going, oh my God, I'm actually portraying something that's nothing like me. And that I think is the biggest piece of advice as I can say is, you know, you'll build a following of people and community who like you, And I think if you can just be yourself, and that's so cringe, like, oh my God, Alex, how cliche. But if you can genuinely tap into being yourself that all of your friends love around you, and somehow find a way to translate that onto the internet, then people will love you, because you'll find a tribe of people that are just like your friends that you're immediately close with. Does that make sense?
Rad. Yeah, that's really valuable advice.
Yeah, you have to be yourself. You cannot hide behind a facade and all of these like perfect pictures and stuff, because I did that for a really long time. Then I stopped doing that and everything tripled, you know?
Do you think I'm myself on social media?
Yes. Yeah. Definitely.
Oh.
Yeah.
Go on.
You're very, very talented on social media, and you also put things, what I've noticed about you is you put things are meticulous, and I like it, because that's type A. You're like a type A athlete where you've got a certain thing, and like a schedule, and I like it. And every time I watch them, I'm like, go on, Amy.
Yeah, go
I'm
on.
Like, that's wicked.
That's the Monday Mile drop in.
Yeah. You know
every
what I mean?
Monday.
Yeah.
Between 7:30 and 8.
Love it. Yeah. We love a Monday Mile.
We do. We love a Monday Mile. On that note, Alex Murphy, I think I have walked you over a mile, and over there
there's sheep.
No, that is not a sheep.
It's an alpaca.
It's an alpaca.
Can we go see the alpaca?
I think we should wrap up this mile
with the alpaca. Let's even get him over here.
Monday Mile listeners, I really hope you've enjoyed that one. Alex Murphy, thank you so much for digging into the depths of your story. Definitely some really, really strong takeaways there.
Oh, and thank you for having me.
To all of the listeners, you've enjoyed that, because, you know, I loved having an American on the podcast.
Yeah, we need an American over here.
Yeah, right? It's just good energy.
I do like being the token American sometimes, because people are like, you guys are always so friendly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a bit more Canadian, isn't it?
Do you think?
No, me.
You need to say A?
A.
A. That's Canadian.
Right.
But if you're from Boston, you'd be like, coffee and coffee.
Well, I think we should go and see the alpaca.
Can we see the alpaca?
Oh, wait, that was Australian. One of our listeners.
Look at him.
It is a wrap. Have an absolutely wicked week.